The views expressed on this show by guests and the hosts on issues outside of the 9/11 controlled demolition evidence are the opinions of those individuals alone and do not necessarily reflect those of architects and engineers for 9/11 truth.
Welcome to 9/11 Freefall. I'm the host, Andy Steele. Well, today we are joined by Bonnie Faulkner. She is the host and producer of Guns and Butter, a very popular show among many people in our movement, which investigates the relationships among capitalism, militarism, and politics, and has an unintimidated platform for the issue of 9/11 truth, which I have seen demonstrated by Bonnie over the years. And it's actually her show that woke up our founder, Richard Gage. We'll talk a little bit about that in the next half hour. But Bonnie, thank you so much for coming on 9/11 Freefall.
Well, Andy, thank you for inviting me, and nice to meet you finally.
Yeah, it's amazing. Some of the people that we still have not had yet on this show, and it's a crime that you have not yet been on 9/11 Freefall to tell your story and how you created this great platform for so many people to get the word out and inspire others. So let's get started with that. I always ask everyone at the beginning of the show, how did you wake up to 9/11? How did you know that we were lied to about that day? Tell us your story.
I'm glad you're asking me that, because I have a very interesting story with regard to that. On September 11th, 2001, I was working as a volunteer field reporter in the KPFA News Department, and that's the Pacifica station in Berkeley, California. And matter of fact, I wouldn't have Guns and Butter if it wasn't for 9/11. When 9/11 happened, the station went to special programming, which means all of the regular shows were either thrown off or changed. Certain programmers went on round the clock for hours, running around to vigils and on and on and on. And I was working with a very aggressive partner in the news department. And she went to the head of a department and got us 3 half-hours to do shows on my idea. What I wanted to do in the news department was start doing economic programming, because there was no such thing on KPFA. They had maybe an armchair Marxist programming, but nobody was doing finance, nobody was doing economics. And if you'll recall, in 2001, the stock market was not doing well. We were in a financial, a bad place, okay? So my idea was to do economic programming. Well, my aggressive friend in the news department went and got us these 3 half-hours to do live shows. And I'd never done a show. I was really terrified, but we were going to do economics. And as serendipity or fate would have it, I was sent an article by Michael Rupert of From the Wilderness, and he wrote a long article that had an economic hook to it. He wrote about the massive put options on United and American Airlines in the days and weeks before 9/11, the puts on these reinsurance companies that insured some of the businesses in the Twin Towers, and Promise Software. And I sent that to my friend, and she said, we're going with him. So I wrote, I was scared to death, Andy. I mean, I'd never done a radio show before. So I had this economic thing going that I wanted to do. So I wrote the economic headlines, went into the station, which is 50 miles away from me, and Kelly Ramirez and I went on. This was October 12th, 2001, not 1 month after 9/11. We went on live for a half hour with Michael Rupert. I was so nervous, Andy, that my arms were shaking. I couldn't barely read my headline. So Kelly, I had to hold on to my arm. I was so scared, but it didn't come across in my voice. And Mike Rupert came on, and it was a blockbuster of a show. He did The Puts. He did, he did a whole thing on Promise Software. And that first little live one-half-hour show on October 12th, 2001, established foreknowledge of the 9/11 events by Wall Street, by the intelligence agencies, by the banks. He went into the insider trading. It proved foreknowledge right there 1 month before 9/11. And to try and remind people what the zeitgeist was then, people weren't questioning what went on. The most radical thing I ever heard anybody say in those first days after 9/11 was, quote, "Why do they hate us?" So, it's as if 9/11 came out and grabbed me. So we did a second half-hour show the following week. And by the way, a lot of people happened to hear that. A second interview with Michel Chosedowski on the attack on Afghanistan as a war of aggression. So we had those three little half-hour shows. Then the following, I believe it was either January or February of 2002. Now, I was still in the news department. Kellya, my aggressive friend, they went into fundraising. She got us an hour-long fundraiser. And, well, what happened in the meantime is that Mike Rupert came up to San Francisco and he gave a three-hour speech at Fort Mason. And everybody who is still anybody in the 9/11 movement, we were all at that talk. Me, Kellya, Yaro Mako, who's been with me from the very beginning of Guns and Butter, he came because he has all this technical knowledge, and he recorded Mike Rupert's speech. This is in January, February 2002. Well, Kellya got us this hour to do fundraising on KPFA, and she knew how to edit. I didn't know how yet, but we sat up all night long in the station and edited down Mike Rupert's three-hour speech to like 52, 53 minutes. And we played that on the fund drive and only left maybe 7 minutes for fundraising. And in that 7 minutes, we brought in something like $17,000, which was pretty unheard of in those days. And the gift that we were offering, you always have to offer a premium, was the very first, to my knowledge, video film on 9/11 called Truth and Lies of 9/11. It was a VHS, and Mike Rupert produced it. I think Cynthia McKinney was on it. I can't remember all of what. And so anyway, that was sort of a mind blower, and it upset a lot of the gatekeepers around the station who started, well, there was one guy in particular who sent in a three-page single-space typed a letter to the station saying that they should never allow Mike Rupert on the air there, and on and on and on. So there was a big upset at the station. Now, this is not their politics, not by a long shot. And it's actually a long story, and I don't want to take up too much time with it. But we put in those days, there was actually some democracy at the station. They had a program council, which they got rid of that many, many years ago. And there were some community members that had been elected to this program council. Now, my friend wrote up, while I was out of town, actually, a whole program proposal for us to get our own one-hour show. Well, I would have never done that. I would have been terrified to have an hour-long show. When I came back, she told me that she'd withdrawn the proposal because she had been told by the then program director that it was dead on arrival. And I said to Kellya, you know what? Why don't you just resubmit it? That will force them to come out in the open and turn it down. And so we went before the program council and made this proposal. And to our horror, they gave us a show. And oh my God, that threw us for a loop because we thought we were going to be turned down. I didn't want a show. And oh my gosh. Anyway, long story short, My friend dropped out and left me holding the bag. I tried to get out of it, and the head of the department said, oh, no, you've got to do it. We've taken a program 11 years standing on this station. We've canceled it. You're in the grid. You've got to go. Well, I was just horrified, terrified. I didn't know what to do. And luckily, Yaro Mako came to my rescue. I'd been taking some classes from him at the JC in Santa Rosa, and he knew how to edit, and his politics were similar to mine. He liked Guns and Butter, and he helped me. Boy, I couldn't have done it without Yaro. And so I started pre-producing one-hour shows, and I was always aiming to do economics, and they'd always turn into 9/11 shows. So anyway, I know the point I want to make about this. When they put me in the grid and said, you have a show, you've got to start doing this, what was my start date? September 11th. So it's as if, Andy, 9/11 just came out and grabbed me. I couldn't get away from it. And so I've been doing it ever since for 19 years, along with, well, a lot of other subjects. And in those days, of course, the 9/11 programming that I did and a few other people did pretty much centered on deconstructing the narrative, the government narrative, the lies, the hijackers, the planes, the geopolitics, the wars. Very, very important programming on many, many different aspects of 9/11. But what we were not doing in those first years, and it was pretty much considered verboten, was the physical evidence of collapse or buildings collapsing into their footprints, controlled demolition. That was considered a no-no. As a matter of fact, I remember it was either John Judge of the Coalition on Political Assassinations or Mike Rupert himself who would refer to the physical evidence of collapse as, quote, urban myths. And so you stayed away from it. But the first programming that we did on Guns and Butter on what is now what everybody does, the collapses of the buildings, the controlled demolitions, was with a software engineer and research scientist, Jim Hoffman. And we did these shows in two parts. And they broadcast at the very end of 2004. So it wasn't practically until almost 2005 that Guns and Butter did any programming on the physical evidence. And those shows were called Your Eyes Don't Lie, Common Sense, Physics, and the World Trade Center Collapses. And, you know, Andy, I should really go back and listen to those shows. It's been so long ago. There was a lot in those shows. But I did want to point out today that that was the first programming that Guns and Butter did on the physical evidence. And now that's what everybody does. And I think people either don't know or forget that that was never done in the first years of the 9/11 truth movement.
Heck no. I can remember that the one kid protesting the Afghan war at my college, the one kid sitting out there all by himself, would sort of be ridiculed and looked at strangely, and that was just protesting whether or not we should avenge 9/11, not saying anything about questioning who was really behind it. That was not even in my paradigm until 2006, and I really do want to highlight that with our audience. Some of the young people not out there listening might not realize just how brave you had to be. I mean, think about the first time that you ever came out for 9/11 truth to your friend and worried about the strange looks. Imagine going out onto the radio, bringing this information to people back in 2001. And Bonnie, I'm very curious because you went from a show that was dead on arrival at first to going to a programming council meeting and somehow getting this approved. What was said at this programming council meeting? And also I want to ask you, you know, I've listened to KPFA when I'm in the Bay Area, and I know it's a very left-leaning station. And something that I have never really gotten, like when I first woke up to 9/11 truth, is that people that I knew who were on the left hated George Bush, but when I would bring this up to them, just kind of inquiring about it, asking if they've heard about it, they would have this visceral reaction. They'd get angry and say it disrespected the families to even question it. from your own perspective, and I'm sure you have many colleagues and you've heard this before, what do you think is going on there?
You mean with the left-leaning liberals being against looking at 9/11? Is that what you're talking about, Andy?
Exactly, yes.
Oh, yeah. Well, listen, I had a real tough time of it. I got the show because a controversy broke out, and it's a long story, but the listeners at of KPFA got wind of the fact that there was censorship going on. Okay, and so they started going to the board meetings and complaining. So there was a push from the audience. Now, KPFA doesn't give a hoot anymore what the audience wants, but back in those days, they paid more attention to that. So that was one of the reasons. Plus, when we went before the program council, there were community members involved. It wasn't just the upper echelon paid staff. And one of the things, the news department was very against the show. One of the things that they were demanding was that I should hold debates. That was one of their angles. And we refused to do that. Kelly pointed out to them that when they did programming on Palestine and the Palestinian issue, they weren't forced to bring on and interview Israeli settlers. But anyway, they gave us the show, I think, because they felt the pressure from the public. Now, the politics there was very difficult. I couldn't deal with the politics there. I was a lone person there. My name was Mud. I'd have to produce the show at the station and use their their production room, et cetera, and drive 50 miles in there when I went to put on the show. And in those days, I was living with my boyfriend. And when I would take off for that 50-mile drive down 101 to Berkeley, he'd always say, "Now, don't let the white van with the tinted windows run you into the median." And as I'd be driving to the station, I'd be thinking, "Oh, God, can I do this? Can I do this?" And I'd go into the station. There was no support for me whatsoever. I was persona non grata. They didn't even assign a board op for my show. I would get to the station, and I'd have to run up and down the aisle, up and down the station, begging people to put my show on, to engineer the show at the board. I'm telling you, it was awful. It was very difficult for me. It was not their politics. But to answer your question, why they're so against 9/11 truth, I don't know. You know, the stations are basically, and particularly these days, mouthpieces of the Democratic Party, as I see it. But they stayed away from that. There was another programmer there that did some of it. She had a little half-hour show called Stepping Out of Babylon. And Dennis Bernstein would have me on occasionally years later. But it's not their politics, and I can't really explain it. I don't have an answer for that. But it was very, very difficult for me in those days.
I bet. And it's so fascinating to hear these stories of what goes on behind the scenes. A lot of people don't realize the amount of work that goes into putting on these kinds of shows. We were talking a little bit about that before we started recording today. And it's not just going to the microphone and talking for a half hour or an hour, or however long it may be. I mean, sometimes you're doing it with no budget, and you still put out a great product, though. And I've heard segments of Guns and Butter over the years, and definitely worth listening to. And we're going to make sure our audience is able to find it after the show is over. Now, we're facing a lot of censorship these days. It's kind of funny. Like, this is what I've observed. When I first started off in 9/11 Truth, you could find a lot of information about it on the internet, YouTube, various platforms. MySpace was big back then. You could always find the information, but when you talk to people out in the general public, your regular rank-and-file individual, a lot of them would be very disdainful at hearing it. They would act disdainful. They didn't want to even entertain it, or they'd find it entertaining that you would even talk about this, you know, wrap it up as a conspiracy theory and move on. Now, as time has passed, I found that when I talk to people out in the public, more of them are receptive. More of them have heard about it, and they don't dismiss you as quickly. However, on the internet, it's being clamped down. It's harder to find 9/11 truth videos than it was many years ago, and everything is just pointing you to some mainstream media source to give you a rehash of the official story. So as we're seeing more and more censorship happen, from your very experienced perspective, what do we in the alternative media do to weather this storm? How can we fight against the censorship, or at least work around it?
You know, I don't have a good answer to your question, because my feeling is that we live in much, much more dangerous times now than we did at 9/11. And as you recall, after 9/11, boy, I mean, they had military in the airports, they were arresting Muslims, et cetera, et cetera. But I feel that right now is a much more dangerous time in this country and the world. And I feel more vulnerable now with the programming than I did after 9/11. You know, after 9/11, oh my God, for so many years, Andy, there was so much enthusiasm and volunteer work and creativity. The 9/11 truth conferences, for instance, Carol Broyer, the head of the Northern California 9/11 Truth Alliance, pioneered the first international inquiry into 9/11. That was in March 2004 at the Herbst Theater in San Francisco. She really kicked off the whole string of 9/11 truth conferences for years. There was another one in 2004 that I went to in Toronto. Then there was a big one in Chicago in 2006. And I went to all these conferences. Alex Jones put on a 9/11 conference down in Los Angeles. I can't remember the year. These were all excellent conferences. There was so much activity. We don't have so much of that now. We do in certain venues, but you know, there was a while for years that people were producing 9/11 documentaries one after another after another. One of my favorite, and I wanted to mention these conferences, one of my favorites was in the summer of 2005, the 9/11 Truth Convergence. That was in Washington, D.C. at American University. And I'm telling you, Andy, everybody was there. It was amazing. It went on for days at American University. And we had a big rally in Lafayette Park across the street from the White House. And so many of the researchers were there, the authors. They gave talks. I made a couple of shows out of it. The Truth Convergence brought together the 9/11 truth movement with the Oklahoma City bombing, with the USS Liberty bombing, Israeli bombing. Some of the people that were talking in the park that day, David Ray Griffin, Peter Dale Scott, Reverend Dorothy McKay, Sonny Miller, Jenna Orkin, Ray McGovern, Morgan Reynolds. He drove me back to American University. He's still around as far as I know, doing 9/11. That was Peter Phillips, Charles Key of the Oklahoma City bombing, Paul Thompson. I don't know if you remember him. He did the 9/11 timeline. He didn't have a political point of view, but he collated all of the information on 9/11. Nafees Ahmed was there. Jim Mars, I met him there. Webster Tarpley, Dr. Robert Bowman, and on and on. I mean, I shouldn't just be listing all these names, I suppose. But I just wanted to express all of the creativity and hard work of volunteers over so many years that have put so much effort and study and research into 9/11. It's just incredible. There was just a huge, huge movement. And as you pointed out, now the censorship is really cracking down. And I used to be able to go on air and do anything I wanted. And people would say to me, well, I didn't know you could broadcast stuff like that. And I'd say, well, I just did. And, well, actually, one of the most important shows that I ever did was an interview with Dr. David Ray Griffin on March 29th of 2006, I think it was. explosive testimony, the 9/11 oral histories. And this this interview, as a result of a lawsuit brought by the New York Times and several families of 9/11 victims, the New York Court of Appeals ordered the city to release hundreds of oral histories of 9/11 witnesses. These witness testimonies were originally gathered shortly after September 11th on the order of Thomas von Essen, the city fire commissioner, who said he wanted to preserve these accounts before they became reshaped by a collective memory. In these oral histories, firefighters and emergency medical workers recount their experiences of that day, including riveting descriptions of explosions seen, felt, and heard in the World Trade Center towers on 9/11. Descriptions are consistent with prepositioned explosives and controlled demolition, not with progressive collapse due to melted steel and pancaking floors. And of course, that's the famous interview with Dr. David Ray Griffin that Bay Area architect Richard Gage, he was out in his car, probably driving to some meeting, and he heard this interview, and he was so shocked, he told me he pulled over to the side of the road and listened to the rest of that interview. And Richard told me later, he thought to himself, could this really be true? Now, Richard, and in those days, we had lots of 9/11 events, and Richard started coming to the 9/11 events, to our 9/11 film festival. There were other events at Cal. He'd come at that time, I believe, with his then father-in-law, and he was just sucking up all of the information, and he was so nice and so enthusiastic and so interested. I remember him buying some of the CDs of Guns and Butter. Next thing I knew, Andy, somebody's telling me that Richard's out at Sonoma State University giving a speech on 9/11, and I didn't know anything about it. I was absolutely astonished. And then, of course, the rest is history. So many of the 9/11 volunteers, and there were very, very many, volunteered with Richard, and of course they put together Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, which persists today and which you're affiliated with. It's just absolutely amazing that that happened.
Absolutely. And here we still stand, and we're not done. We're moving forward. Lots of great things going on. Now, we only got a few minutes left. How do our listeners follow your show, especially if they're in an area where it's not easy to get?
Yes, and I'm sorry that I've been talking so long, because I wanted to talk about the truth burn at Burning Man, but we don't have time for it, I guess. Richard gave a speech. Yara was up there, and they set up they burned with thermite a huge steel beam underneath the truth sign. But well, we don't have time for that. But I'm going to do a show with John Perulis, who did the truth burn, and so I'll keep you posted on that. Well, my shows, most of them anyway, are archived at gunsandbutter.org. Guns and Butter still appears every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Eastern on WBAI in New York City. That's a Pacifica station. It's carried every 3 p.m. Eastern on PRN.FM. That's Gary Nell's internet radio station. Of course, it's carried on NoLiesRadio.org. And it's also carried by up to 30 Pacifica affiliates. And, of course, it's archived on my website.
Absolutely. So please do check this show out. Definitely worth listening. Many great guests come on this program. And, of course, as she mentioned, it's also on No Lies Radio, which this very show also appears on. Bonnie, it's been a pleasure. I think we should have you back at some point to catch up and compare notes, and I know our audience is going to enjoy this particular program, and thank you so much for coming on 9/11 Free Fall today.
Oh, thank you so much, Andy.
This program is on every Thursday night on No Lies Radio at 10 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Pacific, and every other Sunday night on BBS Radio at 8 o'clock Eastern, 5 o'clock Pacific. You can also keep track of the archives by going to 911freefall.com. This is Andy Steele. Say have a great week. Good luck.